the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey folks, Jason Bond here at Stoneville, Mississippi with another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Tom Allen is here with me this morning. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
If you hear a drone in the background, it's a weed eater that is right outside our window this morning.
And it may be a mower at this point
in
time.
Yeah, the mowers are going too. It's not early right now, but I try to wait, you know, at home till at least I think all the neighbors are awake before I start running the power equipment.
Well, and those guys ran until late yesterday.
Yeah, well, they got a lot of stuff to mow.
They got a lot to mow because they were mowing ditch banks and everything else yesterday.
Oh, it's cool when you're like 2 miles from the building, you know, on the station, and the poor guys out there on the mower, you know, the actual lawn mower, you know, mowing the ditches or mowing around risers and stuff like that. You think when you just jump back on the road and head back towards the main compound, that's gonna be quite a ride on your little lawnmower there.
Yeah, that's like an all day endeavor here. Lots of days of the week.
They certainly keep it mowed nice, and it's a good day for it, especially this morning. It's a nice breeze out of the north, but you know our summer's fast winding down. There's not gonna be near as big a crowd around here in a couple of weeks.
So all the intermittent workers will be gone from the experiment station. Most of our help will go back to school.
When does school start?
Well, local school, any of your grade school, middle school, high school starts next week.
Really?
The 8th. Yeah, it's what I'm struggling to deal with the fact that we have a middle schooler in our house now, which is just not.
How'd you get a middle schooler?
As you said on take one just a minute ago, when we were having a conversation behind the scenes, I got old.
Claire's a baby, man.
Claire was a baby when we moved here.
Claire is not old enough to be in middle school.
Claire is a seventh grader this year.
Wow.
Which is, I'm struggling.
You are old.
Just stop.
You look good, though, to be old.
Man, I appreciate it.
Plant pathology has served you well.
Well, at this time of the year, as I tell folks, I don't necessarily eat near as well as I should. I usually run around with a sandwich in my hands, and all I do is walk.
And slam waters.
That's right. Drink water and a little bit of Gatorade here and there so I don't cramp up at night because it's smoking hot outside. I think Jason alluded to something at MAIC last week that the only two people on the station this time of the year that are out walking corn are Mo and Tom. Yeah, we're still walking some corn, looking, evaluating the last few plots and all the rest of that.
I saw a guy, I guess, I don't know what he was checking for. Maybe he was checking growth stage on corn or something yesterday, but I saw him step out of the truck and disappear into the corn. I just thought, wow, that's, glad I'm not you. So anyway, what's going on in the plant pathology world?
You know, it was quiet until a few weeks ago. Now you've got, and that's, I should even hesitate to say that. I mean, the corn crop is all over the board in this state. Man, I had a guy text me the other day and say, hey, I got some southern rust showing up and some corn that's at like blister milk, and then I've got a field right across the road that's at like V6 because they put it behind some dirt buckets, and I'm like, good grief.
Ben Lawrence and I were riding yesterday, and there was a, you know, it's like the second field off the road, and it's kind of back up in behind some trees, and just little bitty corn, like you say, like V6 corn, and we both like looked at each other, and Ben, so maybe it's a duck hole.
Yeah.
Maybe it is, but yeah, you're right. It's spread out. Just unbelievable.
This is, you know, I can only imagine how the farmers feel, but from a research standpoint on this station, it feels a little surreal this year. Everything is just strange. Everything's stacked on top of one another. It's tough to look at plots. We've been spraying and evaluating stuff right on top of one another, and everything's run together. But
well, that corn, you know, I feel like a lot of it, you basically got corn planted in a really compact period, but there was two of them. You know, is that last, you know, few days of March into the first day or two of April, and then we got all the rain for 3 weeks in April, and then when it dried back up, the rest of the corn went in. You know, so it's spread out for planting date, and then plus it's spread out because all the other reasons, you know, the continuous rain and all that we've had throughout the summer.
Yeah, it's bizarre to say the least. And then, you know, from the pathology standpoint, I still think things have been pretty quiet. Between the curvularia leaf spot calls that I think people are still trying to wrap their head around what that is and what it looks like, and a few other strange anomalies out there that we're still trying to diagnose.
So there hadn't been anything in corn this year that has been overly concerning?
I'd say nothing major to this point, but some of this younger corn, I think folks need to really pay attention to. That's going to be something we'll be watching for the next several weeks, obviously.
So if a guy has corn, but he's not used to having corn this late, what are some of the things that, someone needs to look out for?
The biggest thing on my list that I'd be concerned about would be southern rust. Southern rust is the one that it's a later season disease. At least it was until, the last few years. And I think it's gotten a lot more press. And certainly with the corn crop being much later north from where we are, it's one that they're definitely focused on a little bit more this year than what they have been some other.
'Cause some of that stuff, man, from what I hear, they're going to have trouble with it, just with heat finishing that out.
Yeah, you got folks on Twitter squawking about it. It may not make it to the first set of frost dates in some places, depending upon where they are. And somebody had said the other day, corn here is like a week to 2 weeks from tasseling. And I'm like, man, that's way behind.
Yeah, no kidding.
And look, I grew up all over the Midwest, and the general statement up there was knee high by the 4th of July.
Yeah.
They've been behind that a good bit this year.
Like I said, I haven't seen it myself, but I've talked to a couple of people that have, and they said it's just amazing. Fallow fields that hadn't been planted, or fields that have been planted and replanted. And of course, we had all that here. I mean, that's nothing, that's nothing unique. But you just think about those big sprawling corn acres, because we're sitting here talking about corn specifically, and definitely odd for them. So what else is going on? Soybeans is always a big deal for you.
Soybeans have been pretty quiet too, which is strange. Not a lot of diseases out there. Most of the things that are picking up right now are lower canopy issues. A little bit of brown spot, some target spot, and I contend those are like two of the most common diseases we run across. I don't get too alarmed about them because they're typically in the lower canopy. They don't typically manifest themselves and get up into that upper canopy and cause problems, but they can if the environment's right. And this year, the environment's been all over the board. It's frustrating to be a plant pathologist, at least from the plot rating standpoint, but for farmers, I think that's great news that things are not going to be near as problematic this year as maybe what they have been. Soybean rust has been quiet, too.
Price is down, and any applications of anything we can miss at this point is going to be good. And then our late planting date, yield potential is going to be off of the probably what the target was in a lot of places. So I think anything that they can do at this point to shave cost is going to be positive.
And that's super important. Meeting the economics is something that everybody should be sitting down thinking about. This time of the year, those of us in the plant pathology realm always get perplexed by the conversations of fungicide applications in corn at Dent. That's typically Dent, is about what we expect to be at in most of our corn crop at this point in time. And the southern rust dilemma, again, for lack of a better word, is always kind of a...
Easy with that mic stand there, dude.
I did bonk myself in the nose. Well, it's a big nose, so it's kind of hard to keep out of the way anyways. That southern rust and Dent applications, you always see a lot of information on Twitter, lots of folks talking about it. And the one thing that people usually like to declare is that if you don't put a fungicide on at Dent to manage southern rust, the corn crop will fall over. All your corn will hit the ground. And I don't know that I can't sit here on this couch and speak into this microphone and say that we've seen that widespread. There certainly have been some field instances where corn has fallen over as a result of some anomaly, wind or something else. But you do definitely, and a lot of the folks with a lot of experience with rusts and rusts and corn will suggest that if you get early infection, and when I say early infection, pre-tassel or right at tassel of southern rust, you could have some cannibalism and some stalk integrity issues whereby the plant may succumb to itself and fall over in the event of a minor wind occurrence. But that's certainly not something we've seen broad spectrum, wide scale. And more often than not, the general consensus is fungicide applications as late as Dent to manage southern rust aren't necessarily economical. And in a year like you just indicated, when prices are down, should we be making large input costs? this late in the season when we're talking about less than $4 a bushel corn?
My weed control questions obviously have slowed way down to non-existent now, but the tail end of our time of the year, I had even transitioned into bringing up the point with guys when they did have questions that, and I've heard, I think it was Darren said this last week in his talk at MAIC, you know, spend the money where you're going to get something back out of it. Because like with weed control, you know, when we just kept spraying and kept spraying and kept spraying and, you know, poor control or new flushes, whatever, you know, at some point you got a calf rope and say, you know, this is what we got and we're just going to have some, we're going to have some pigweeds left out here. You know, and address them, you know, how they need to be addressed in the future. But, you know, at this point, we can't put any more money into this crop for this, you know, for this problem, because you still had the disease time of year to come and the insect time of the year to come. And, you know, that's all you've got to have dollars left to spend on those as well.
Especially not knowing what the insects are going to do from here forward. Yeah. And we do still have a lot of fairly young soybean fields throughout the state. And I think being focused on what may happen to those moving forward is definitely beneficial. And from where I sit, Southern Rust, and we've talked a lot about this, like, via just group text message amongst ourselves in the southern U.S., it just has not blown up like it typically does. And I think a lot of that is its environment. The temperature's been up and down, and that particular fungus does like things a lot hotter than what we've had the last few weeks. And I think that contributes a lot to it, because even some of the field situations that we've seen the last few weeks, we've walked back into them and just said, Southern rust is just not exploding like it has in the past.
So what part of the canopy does that show up in?
I'd like to say ear leaf and above, but this year you can find a little bit of it below the ear leaf. And that one moves in from somewhere else because it doesn't overwinter in our production system in the continental United States. So it has to blow in out of Mexico or from the Caribbean or from southern Florida, where they may be growing corn throughout the year. My folks live down there and they say, man, there's always sweet corn down here around the Everglades, mm-hmm. and anything around like Miami and that area west across the peninsula, they've got sweet corn growing through there. But it'll blow in, and typically you can find it higher in the canopy, because that's usually what people say. You know, common rust is typically lower, southern rust will be higher, but you can have common rust throughout the canopy. It just kind of depends on when that blows in there and starts to manifest itself and actually produce the pustules that sporulate that lead to the next flush of the disease. And that's not, you know, this year in particular, we've not had real big questions or issues about people diagnosing or identifying the differences between common and southern. I think it's good. Lots of folks can tell the difference between.
Do we have treatments that are effective in stopping the progression of that disease if it does get to a point where it's bad?
We do. Most of the foliar fungicides, and I think it kind of depends on state by state. Most pathologists feel a little differently about which fungicides should be used. Triazoles are effective, probably not as effective as like a two-way mode of action, strobilurin and triazole, because then you're helping cure it with the triazole and then preventing additional spread with the strobilurin is typically the conventional wisdom on that situation. For any of those farmers that have younger corn, scout and make application decisions as needed based on potential for yield potential, I think is the most important thing to really be focused on.
And so then if it shows up ear leaf and above, then you do have, you know, if it hit threshold, for lack of a better word, but, you know, a treatable level of infestation or infection, then you do have a chance of stopping it with it being in the upper canyon. You know, Jeff and Angus and Don were in here the other day, and you know, they were talking about eggs or worms or both showing up in the lower canopy, and I think it was Jeff made the comment, you know, we just can't get to them, you know, with the treatments now. And of course I've had conversations with folks about, you know, big beans or big cotton that's already lapped the middles, and you know, there's stuff down under there, and I mean, if you don't have hoods, there's no, you can't justify spraying it because you can't get the coverage on it. But this,
no, that's right.
With this southern rust, if it's in that upper canopy, if it gets bad enough, then you at least have an opportunity to get coverage on it.
You'll dry it down with most of the fungicides, and then you'll prevent it from moving to leaves that are not already infected, because you don't have to get the product all the way into the canopy. We're not trying to manage weeds all the way down there, and I realize that almost exclusively we use aerial applicators for our corn, which is so different than the Midwest. It's crazy to see those guys driving through cornfields in Iowa on Twitter.
Man, but I tell you what, 2019, there's a lot of cornfields that you could get through with a big sprayer, because there is some short corn.
We've got much shorter corn crop this year in a lot of places.
Ben and I made a big loop yesterday looking at all manner of different things, and man, that just seemed to be the common denominator everywhere we went. Is that corn short or is it just me? But it is. It's just short corn.
And I had a guy call the other day and say, you know, hey, if my farmer decides to treat, he may put his ground rig through there. And I was like, man, nobody does that in this state.
Yeah.
That's just crazy.
But I think some of it you can get through.
Oh, yeah. And they lay that stuff over. Watching the videos on Twitter is just unreal.
I'm no agronomist, but, you know, with those leaves in that upper canopy being the leaves that are feeding the ears, I just wouldn't want to do anything to damage that upper part of that plant. I don't care how short it is.
I spray all our corn with a John Deere 6000 tricycle high boy. That's the entomology programs. Man, you shred leaves because you bend that stalk over. And I've never had a problem where I've broken stalks, but you certainly do get a little, you know, when you hear the ears banging against the...
That's not cool.
That's a little disconcerting.
You know, ear set at different heights, you know, for different hybrids too, and that would play into that as well.
That's right. And we typically pick something that's pretty short to begin with because we know that's what we're going to be doing. I think farmers need to be aware that there is a big concern for that. You know, and there's been a lot of university research that's done from an economic standpoint talking about application timing. And I know Jason mentioned threshold. The hardest thing about plant diseases is there isn't one. I think it's a gut instinct and yield potential and what growth stage am I at and how much do I have and how much longer do I have until I put the combine in the field. And in a lot of cases, those are important things to consider. And then the other thing to consider is we do a big monitoring program throughout the United States to look to see where southern rust is. And there is an actual map that's out there that you can look at that's corn.ipmpipe.com. That's ipmpipe.org, and that's the full nation. You'll see where
that was a lot of peas.
That was a lot of peas. I realize that. Most, I won't say everybody, but most extension specialists with corn pathology responsibilities contribute to that, put that information on there. And in fact, there's plenty of information on Twitter about that as well. If you don't have a Twitter account, I mean, I highly recommend at least getting on there to see what's being said. It's a big time sucker sometimes. We will all admit that.
I feel like you've kind of stepped up your Twitter game this year. I don't care when you're walking corn, but I mean, you've put some really good pictures on there that you know, I think have really gotten some information out. I kind of backed off on it. I felt like I was getting into a pattern where everything I was doing on there was negative. And not that it was negative, but it was just, you know, it was a drift, or it was, you know, we missed these weeds, or it just, there wasn't ever anything good, you know. I never had a positive way to spin it, but I mean, usually I don't get calls about the good things that happen either, so maybe I need to redirect on the way I handle that, you know, show some more plot pictures and things like that, kind of the same thing that you've been doing this year.
You know, years ago I was opposed to doing that because I just didn't think the character limit really lended itself to what pathology was doing. But now I think with the character limit and the fact that you can, you know, like three or four pictures, I think sometimes from an educational standpoint is important, because I see a lot of things on Twitter that are being misdiagnosed or mischaracterized, you know, lots of pictures of herbicide injury that, oh, you know, this is this plant disease or, something else. But I, you know, and I think it's beneficial, because a lot of times it's hard to look at a picture and say, hey, that's what it is. But I think if you're doing it current and people can run out and check things in a field, because, you know, the scout schools and everything we do early in the season, I've had people say, man, it'd be great if you could bring plants that were inoculated. I'm like, do you know how hard that would be to do with all those things in a greenhouse?
Yeah, how many 12-foot tall corn plants do you have in May?
None. And keeping some of that inoculum around would be really difficult. And we also don't really have a functioning greenhouse in Stoneville that would really help for that.
Hey, so speaking of rain, I know you moonlight as a meteorologist. What do you think you know, for the, you mentioned soybeans just for a minute. So in the little bit of time we got left, what do you think on weather patterns from now till mid, late September, when hopefully, I know some of these soybeans are not going to be wrapped up by then, but just what's your gut feeling on how the soybean is going to wind down for the remainder of the year?
Man, that's a great question. If I could make, you know, prolific statements about what I thought was going to happen, I probably wouldn't be sitting here right now. But so long as we dodge a bunch of the tropical systems that might occur at that general point in time, I think we're going to be okay. And I've not done, you know, we used to do the big Sentinel plot monitoring effort for soybean rust. And I was down south like the 5th of July, and I didn't see anything down. It was pretty dry in some of the places I'd gone, but I need to make another loop here, kind of check around and see how things are looking. But so far, I mean, from a disease standpoint, I plant pretty susceptible, frog eye susceptible varieties. Man, I have like no frog eye in my efficacy plots. It's kind of discouraging.
Well, but that's a good thing, you know, for the real world.
It's a great thing, but it's hard then when I'm going to start shifting into looking at soybean OVTs, and there won't be a lot of stuff to really make heads or tails of. And, you know, we do that crop update at MAIC, and I keep a year folder on my computer, and I always look at last year's presentation, and it's fascinating to look year to year at what we've been talking about.
Well, you know, I had a conversation with somebody this morning about that, and, you know, everything we talked about last week down there, those were conversations that we probably would have ordinarily had mid-June or late June, just with everything being, you know, we're a solid 3 to 4 weeks behind, I feel like, on everything, you know, across all the crops. And some of it's not, you know, there's some corn out there that's done. You know, I don't know when we'll see the first combine run, but there's some corn that's done. It's drying down quickly. But then, like you said, there's some little corn, and then there's some soybeans that, oh, my goodness, man, they have a long way to go.
Yeah, they were planting some beans in the Natchez area like the 5th of July. That makes me a little nervous because I know that we'll probably be wrapping stuff up. And then, heck, I mean, I shouldn't talk. We've got some that we planted really late, too. But we stagger everything in the pathology program because pathologist has to survive, you know, the months of like August and September.
You're trying to pull stuff in there too to get your evaluations in. So, all right, you got any parting shots, words of wisdom from Tom Allen?
Stay tuned to the blog. Stay tuned to Twitter. You know, pick up the phone and
stay
call.
Stay tuned to the podcast. Don't forget the podcast.
That's right. Podcast, I'm sorry. You know, pick up the phone. Don't be shy. Ask questions. Ask for help, because I think that's, we all need to do well this year, and we all need to help each other this year, and asking important questions is meaningful.
And, you know, Tom is really accessible. If you never called Tom always answers the phone. He works about 11 days a week, so and his phone's been lighting up. It's laying over here on the table. It's been lighting up ever since we've been sitting here. So I know he's got places to go and plots to rate and all that. So, Tom, appreciate you taking some time this morning. And, again, if y'all need anything from any of us, you know, here at Stoneville or in Starkville, I'm sure we're all happy to help you anytime. Have a good day.
Thanks.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.